Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Second hour of the show. Nate Bauer, Blue Way Illustrated in just a few minutes. Merrill Hodge, final half hour. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great product lines, awesome sales staff, great service department. They're the hallmark of being the best. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Nate Bauer in a few moments, but first our play-by-play call of the day. For the first time, LeBron James and Zion Williamson on the same floor as the Lakers take on the New Orleans Pelicans, and LeBron goes to work from outside.
Has really proven to be trouble for the Pelicans. They got Favors and Drew Holiday playing with three fouls. Zion on LeBron James, and he hits a three. You knew he was going to make it.
Well, because the hesitancy that time of Zion Williamson to come out and guard LeBron on the perimeter.
Pelicans trying to take it inside, and they are being met heavily. LeBron James, how about an 11-0 LeBron run here for Los Angeles? A quick 14-point lead.
LeBron James, and that game on TNT last night, the call up Brian Anderson and Jim Jackson. I had the pleasure of working a couple of games in my career with Jim Jackson. He is a first-class guy and an outstanding analyst, really smart. I have a lot of respect for Jim. Really enjoyed the couple of games we worked together. And Brian Anderson's a pro's pro. And that was on TNT last night, and the Lakers did beat the Pelicans in Los Angeles at Staples Center. All right, I know it's been drizzling today, but I don't know if we're dragging him off the golf course or not. Nate Bauer joining us from Blue White Illustrated.
Ha, I wish. I did golf last week, though, Steve.
You did?
So, dirty secret. I was accompanying my wife in San Antonio for a foot and ankle surgeon, whatever, it doesn't matter. They're doctors. They're all smarter than me. And so, well, counter that. I was the smart one because I spent 2 days golfing. So, you know, it all worked out.
Well, they're smarter than we are because they picked San Antonio for conventions. All right, so let's get to that part. So Patrick Chambers at his press conference today, he obviously was asked about Myron, and he said?
I'm going to let you guess. Come on.
There's no update on him right now. He's making progress, and you know, we'll have to see what the doctors say.
You know, I don't even know that he said he's making progress. I think that he said he's day-to-day, and...
Aren't we all?
Aren't we all, exactly. No, I mean, look, like, I think that, you know, maybe there would be a little bit better tact in just announcing it before every... You know what I mean? Like, rather than even ask a question. You know, maybe that would be a better way to play it, but the reality is
that's how I did it at Hoops Club today. And I said,
yeah,
look,
right.
I just got up. I said, don't even bother asking. I said, this is the way it is.
Yeah, and so I think that what needs to be understood, and that what I think everybody at this point can understand or should understand, is look, like, the kid's not going to play until he is healthy enough to play. And so what's healthy enough? You and I and Pat and really anybody that's not the team doctor don't get a say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't, nobody has a say in that. And so it is truly up to, Dr. Billy and Dr. Sebastianelli to make a decision as to when he should be cleared to play. And as of today, that has not been decided, you know.
Knowing your fan base, right? if it were, if you're doing the Michigan State green and white board, they'd have, they'd be buying tickets to Atlanta. Knowing your fan base, they're now buying tickets to Dayton. Would that
correct.
Be, yeah, that'd be fun.
No. That's giving too much credit. They are back on the firing train. And good. Let me guess.
It's coaching and scheme.
Correct. So the last two games.
Oh my God.
We're hearing from people that those two games were each lost due to coaching. And, you know, these are people who did not speak during the win streak, you know. And so, look, like, the only thing that I can take out of this, and I've been doing this 15 years, you've been doing it, you know, for decades and decades and decades.
I told Naismith to cut a hole in the bottom of the peach basket. I mean, that's a long time.
Yeah, it sounds right. No, but it sounds very, very stressful to be a fan. I can't even imagine the stress that they're under. You know, to have to go through these wild swings. I mean, it's just such a rarity, I guess. To be fair, you know, Penn State fans haven't been in this spot. It's been a decade since they've been in a position where, from game to game, you know, like, losses happen in college basketball, but they don't have to happen 10 games at a time and 12 games at a time. And so now they've had a 3-game losing streak. They've had an 8-game winning streak. They've had a 2-game losing streak. You know, they're going to win again. There will be more wins in this season. It's just a matter of you know, taking a step back and understanding that, as Pat said today, this afternoon, and I thought it was, you know, pretty good of him to admit it, sometimes you just lose. Sometimes you dunk a ball and it goes over the backboard. Like, how rare is that? you know, just sometimes things happen where you're playing roughly the same as you were when you were winning, and you lose that game. And the same thing is true as losses, that you might have played the exact same in that loss as when you won. And you could have lost the game that you won, but you didn't. You won it. You know, it's just kind of the way it happens. And there's such a small margin between that win and that loss that, you know, on any given night, you can end up on the right side or the wrong side.
No, there's no question about it. Lamar Stevens was disappointed that he felt like he lost the game yesterday. He had 29. You want your star to be your star, and he was yesterday, but he's going to have to get more help. I mean, there's just no getting around it. I mean, he's got enough people around him that can help. They just need the help.
Yeah, no question. And so you know the numbers even better than I do, but I'm going out and making a I'm making an argument here that for Penn State is most people look at Curtis Jones and they look at Isaiah Brockington and they kind of peg those guys as maybe differentiating factors, but I actually think it's not them. Those two guys are bonuses for what Penn State does. Penn State's success and failure this season is very, very closely tied, especially without Byron, to what Miles Dredd and Seth Lundy do offensively.
Mm-hmm. No doubt.
If you don't get a point from Seth Lundy, as they did it yesterday, you're going to be in trouble. If you have Miles shoot 1 of 8 from 3, as he did yesterday, or 2 of 8, I guess it was, and 1 of 8 against Illinois, you're going to be in trouble. They need that offensive production, and they need consistency, particularly from both of them during this time while Myron's not playing. But even if you go back to Wisconsin and Rutgers and Minnesota earlier in the season, those two were the absentees, right? Lundy had the explosive first half in Minnesota, and they were competitive. And then what happened? He disappeared in the second half. Miles was never there in that game. They lose those games. I mean, so it's really, really dependent on those two guys giving you, at least 5 to 10 points a game out of both of those. Because if you don't have it, you're really in trouble right now.
Well, I think the bottom, there's a couple of indicators to me. Number one, yesterday they only hit four threes in the game.
Yep.
As you know, I've said many times, whether it's on the show or the broadcast, that Penn State needs to be the team that's hitting 7-9, 7-10 threes in a game. It's just part of the formula of winning. The other part, too, is that yesterday is one of the few times where the block and steal combo, Penn State didn't win. And Penn State needs to win the block steal combo because that's part of how they win games. So they didn't win the 3-point line yesterday, and they didn't win the block steal combo lines yesterday.
Yep, and you know it's funny because what did they win? They won the rebounding battle.
Yep,
and it matters.
That's the first time all season they've lost a game where they out rebounded a team.
Right. So I mean, it's just they need transition points, the points off of turnovers. 14 turnovers. Indiana has 21 points off of those. To Penn State's 8. You know, these are the stat lines that really they tell you a lot about how Penn State plays. To me, another one to always watch is just volume of shots. They got 53 shots yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, that's not enough attempts for the percentage
right.
of a shooting team as they are to win a game like that. You know, so and why is it fewer attempts than Indiana? Turnovers, right? And because they're not creating, like you said, through steals. I mean, so
right.
those numbers aren't there, they're also in trouble.
Yeah, and that's there's no question about the other part too. Is and I've said this about football forever, and I've said this about basketball forever. Right? It really is great when you can play with the lead. Penn State rarely played with the lead last week. Doesn't mean you can't give up the lead like Indiana did yesterday. But Indiana had at least some collateral built up where it allowed them to come back and eventually win. But playing with the lead and Penn State's ability to jump teams early was a hallmark during that 8-game winning streak, right? Last week they didn't play with the lead that often.
They went on a 30-5 run between the first the end of the first half and the second half, and had a 6-point lead, right?
Yep.
Like, so you go on a 30-5 run, all that energy, all that expended, right? And all of it does really is erase the hole that you've dug for yourself. It's one of the hallmarks of the win streak is you're right. Like they were playing with a lead, they would jump out the 10-point lead and just keep it there for the rest of the rest of the way.
That's right.
You know, and so I feel very strongly, that Wednesday night, you know, particularly against this team, this Rutgers team, you know, it's important for them, for this team to kind of remember who they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right now at this moment, because Rutgers' skill is not great. They're not a very skilled team, but they're tough and they will punch you. And so now you add those two factors to begin with the fact that they're desperate.
Mm-hmm.
Rutgers needs wins, period.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they do.
That season is sliding and slipping away from them. They need wins, period. Penn State has to be ready for those things right out of the gate. They have to be ready for that desperation. They have to be ready for that physicality. And they have to find a way to with or without Byron, get that mojo back, get that energy and that offensive production back to where it needs to be.
Because Harper's playing really well. I mean, he's playing terrific basketball right now. So Ron, when you see Ron Harper Jr. out there, he's playing really well. Geo Baker is playing well. I mean, not great, but he's playing well. But here's the area for Rutgers, all right? That just keep this in mind because I've already run the numbers on this. They average 5 more fouls per game on the road than they do at home.
Right, so right, which you know is funny in the sense that it tells you a lot about what you need to know about this league that you're not going to get called for fouls at home. just anybody, including Penn State. I mean, Penn State's a very foul-prone team, but you know some of the calls that Penn State got in trouble with yesterday in terms of Lamar having two and Jamari having two early. You know, those calls aren't going to go against you at home, or they're less likely to go against you at home. So especially for a team like Rutgers, who's as physical as they are.
Right. And that's my point about Rutgers. They play physical ball, but there's the five additional fouls per game on the road. Now, look, they've also played from behind on the road, too. So they may have been in position to foul at the end of the games. I just want to be fair about that.
Right. But, you know, and this kind of harkens back to yesterday. Penn State needs to shoot better free throws, too.
Yes, they do.
You know, some missed front ends yesterday, and in some critical spots that, you know, might have helped them get over the hump. But, you know, this Penn State team is still capable, right? They're still a good team. They just have to find a way to kind of recalibrate and get back to the things that led them to all that success, really over the past 5 weeks.
So it's scheme and coaching.
Always.
Scheme. Those two big words that are used at the tailgate. Wow. Bobby knows a lot about basketball. Scheme and coaching. No clue what the scheme is, but I didn't see you practice, so I don't think you know.
this is one of my favorite lessons through all of this is, does the shooter have an open shot?
Yes. We think at that point the scheme's pretty good.
Because here's the deal is, the scheme is good if the shooter has an open shot.
Yeah.
If players are taking shots where there isn't anybody right in front of them, that is good basketball.
Right.
Because the reality, especially at this level, is that most players at this level are going to make that shot.
Here's the bottom line. If you really want to know if it's really working, all right. Usually, you want to have a lot of dribbling if there's about six on the clock, because it's go time, it's ISO time. Now you may kick it out for a pass, whatever, but that's the time. If a team is getting as many passes as dribbles, that means there's ball movement. That means it's working. It doesn't mean you're going to make the shot, but it means it's working.
You want open shots, and then let the chips fall where they may. Some days you might not have it. Some days you will. You know, Purdue, they couldn't duplicate that if they tried.
Sure.
You know,
that's right.
It's just one of those days. Wisconsin earlier in the season, probably the same thing. Couldn't duplicate it if you tried.
Yep.
Right? I mean, going 0-12 from the floor in a row is hard to do.
I could do that. I could do that in a heartbeat.
For Big Ten basketball players other than Northwestern.
Yes.
That's hard to do.
Nate, thanks so much. Appreciate it very, very much.
Anytime.
All right.
Always.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Nate Bauer, Blue White Illustrated, great to have him with us and his perspective as Penn State gets ready to take on Rutgers tonight in the Jordan Center at 7 o'clock on, beginning at 6:30. Rutgers has had a great run this season at 18-10, but 17 of those 18 wins are at the rack, including one against Penn State. I mean, Penn State led that game by 10 in the first half, and then went stone cold and turned the ball over too much. It's not just turnovers. It's with the live ball turnovers, just what crushes you in the game. The Illinois game a week ago. Penn State's playing Illinois 8 days ago in the Jordan Center. Okay. And Illinois had 4 second-half shot clock violations. Now, that's great defense. But one thing about a shot clock violation, it's a dead ball turnover. So you just take it out of bounds, and the team can set up their defense. Right? It's great that you got the shot clock violation. But it's a dead ball turnover as opposed to a live ball turnover. Live ball turnovers normally turn into fast break points and turn into momentum plays like that. Penn State had live ball turnovers at Rutgers the first time. Rutgers is also a very good offensive rebounding team. But it should be pointed out that in the last 3 games that Rutgers has played, they've had a total of 20 offensive rebounds. That's it. A total of 20 offensive rebounds in their last 3 games. They're averaging nearly 12 offensive rebounds per game. So that means, if that's the case, it's like, I think it's 11.8 per game is what they're averaging. So let's just round it to, 35? That means they're minus 15 in offensive rebounding, a minus 5 per game over their last 3. So Penn State needs to keep them off the offensive glass. Ron Harper's playing really well. Really well. Shooting the ball well, making plays, good defender. Geo Baker's playing really well right now. Most of the other guys for Rutgers are slumping right now, but not Baker, not Harper. And so keep an eye on them tonight. It'll be critical as Penn State takes on Rutgers at the BJC. 7 o'clock, the tip-off, and we're on beginning at 6:30 this evening as Dick Girardi joins me for the broadcast. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Final half hour brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Concussion research is such an important topic right now. With that, we bring in Merrill Hodge, the former Steelers great. Merrill, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Good talking to you, Steve. Happy to be on there, buddy.
All right. So, look, there are certain assumptions that are made, and once a narrative is established, it is very difficult to buck the narrative. Do you consider that a fair statement? And if so, how does it apply to the argument on CTE?
You mean the narrative that's already been established?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt. And that's one of the real issues with this particular subject, you know. Just to share you a quick story and making this real quick, I've done a lot of media. I've had literally people from the media call me and start right off the bat and say, I cannot believe you don't believe in CTE. How can you tell me concussions don't cause CTE? And I'm like, okay, wait a minute. Have you read the book? No. I'm like, well, no.
Right.
I know how you call. I'm called to discuss the book because all those questions are answered in the book. So let me start with how this book came about. I really came from a parent perspective. Regardless of all the things I've done, I'm a parent. My son started playing at age 7. He's a quarterback at BYU. Just had surgery today on his toe. I've seen the headlines. I was like, okay, what is it? And I have a life philosophy to find a way. Actually, I wrote a book on that, and it's always give me action, inspired action to do something about it, find answers, find the people. Well, I went across the country, even into Canada. I met with neuropathologist after neuropathologist. I cut brains with them. I sat there. I did it myself. I asked questions, and I asked that one question, what is CTE? Universally, this is exactly what they would say to me. They say, Merrill, CTE is a pattern in an observation state. We don't know what causes it, and we don't know what causes it causes. We have cases where they played football and had concussions. We have cases where they played sports and had no concussions. And we have cases where they never played football. They never played sports. And they have no history of head trauma. And I'm like, well, why do we only hear about the football ones then? They would say this, the experts, the neuropathologists, exactly right. The science community is disturbed that it has gotten this far. We shake our heads. We are observing this. We have no idea. And I was like, now, then there's a litany of things from that. how the narrative has gone so far. You just use the media. For example, they talk, just I told you the stories, they call me up and they tell me for fact. In fact, one guy was going to send me the science papers, believe it or not, to prove he was right, that concussions cause CTE. I said, just so you know, you're the only guy in the history of this planet that has that science, so you know. So please send it. I'm looking forward to reading those papers. I've read all the papers. I've had them explained to me. Now, to his credit, he calls me, emailed me back a day later. He said, I'm sorry, I'm wrong. But for years, this guy has been printing that and saying that.
Right.
And that's why the book became so important, because we explained the steps of science, standards of science, how incomplete the science work is at this time, the true definition of where they are versus what you see in the media. But then all of the good things that are going on in sports, the things that if parents knew about, how exciting it was, from protocols to treatments and therapies, if your son or daughter had a concussion. And it's not just in his athletic arena. I tell people all the time, my son had his first concussion his freshman year, 4 days before their first bowl game. He slipped in the shower. So it can happen anywhere in any environment. So wouldn't it be better to know how to handle head trauma, the treatments and therapies that are there for it, and the real truth of the science? Now, you do with what you want, but at least I've done a lot of the work to help you understand it, and it'll help empower you. And then you use the information, what works best for you, your family, your choices, and how you want to use it for activities.
I mean, I'll give you one that is a fact, and I've used it on the show a couple of times. There are actually, quote, more head injuries playing soccer than there are playing football. Yet football is always the focal point of this. And how much does that bother you that football is always the focal point?
Well, another reason I wrote the book, because we actually break that down, too, and explain all of the concussions in all of the activities, not even in sports. I mean, just all activities, trampoline, sure. We could start going on and on with stuff. I just got off a call today, and this guy probably put it best. He was a reporter. He's done a lot of research on the rehab centers across this country with concussions, across the country, okay? He said, he's asked everybody, if football were to be abolished today, no football at any level, he's like, what would that do to your concussion clinic? All of them said, a majority of their, basically said, it would affect us, it would only affect us 10%. Meaning, it's only 10% of their work is from football.
Yeah. Football.
The other 90% is from all other activities and other sports. Wheeled sports, bicycles, roller coasters, I mean, the trampolines, basketball, soccer, lacrosse, I mean, the whole litany of other sports. But I was like, wow, 10%. Even that kind of, I was like, wow. He goes, it would not affect us at all. He goes, there's 10% of what we see is football related from head trauma.
You did a lot of research on this. Not a little. I mean, a lot. I mean, I'm sitting there, I'm reading this, and I'm going through this book, right? And Jack Hamm, by the way, is going to borrow the book for me, too. So it's that. I'm interested to see what Jack says when he's done reading it. But when I look at it, the Boston University work has essentially, and if I'm using the wrong word here, let me know, it seems like the BU work has been considered gospel on this. Has it been tough to break through gospel when talking to people because of the BU studies are given such credence?
Well, first of all, you're right. And it's always tough to break through something like that unless you have the one thing that matters. You have the truth. And you have the power of that. You have the scientific evidence of that. The one thing I think people need to understand, like, the science papers out there, everybody uses. You know, it isn't like, you know, Dr. Cummings and I have our own science papers, and it's our science papers against BU science papers. No, it's all the papers. Mayo Clinic, Vanderbilt, I mean, not just BU's that nobody gets to see. There's voices out there screaming, slow down. This has gone out of control, but nobody wants to hear those. Nobody listened to them. That's why I wrote the book, too. I put it all in there. I got a website, brainwashbook.com. The science papers are there. So it isn't like I'm saying, hey, take my word for it. I want you to educate yourself and empower yourself. Read the papers. Read some of the disclaimers on them, or the conclusions at the end. There's literally these words in there. Caution. You can't use this to gauge disease of any kind. Okay, I'm kind of paraphrasing there, but the caution word is in there. The you can't use this is in there. And you can't use this to measure level of disease, like in age of exposure. That's literally in the papers. And then the same people who write the player or write the paper are in the media, and they contradict what they wrote in the science paper. And it's just like that stuff was just so disturbing to me. It's abuse of the Hippocratic Oath they signed, quite honestly, that you wrote the paper, you know that you got bullet holes all over the place. You even wrote the word caution, I can't use this, and then you present it as fact. And that's where we've gone wrong. That's why we wrote the book. And we do that, too. We help you understand that in there, the difference between what you've seen in the media versus what really is in the science work.
I mean, you and I are both big believers in what football can do for you, attitude-wise, discipline-wise, athletically. There's a long list of reasons why football is really good. You have invested a lot of time in youth football. Merrill, what are the importances of, A, teaching the game right, and in your experience, what's a good time to then you start thinking about allowing young people to have contact playing the game in terms of, okay, instead of flag football, now you're going to have contact playing it?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I'm going to use my own experience and how I did it. I'm not going to ever tell anybody how to do it because I don't think anybody should do that on both sides of the fence. Kids, if you're going to let your kid play tackle football, nobody should question that. And if they do, they're uninformed and ignorant and don't want to know the facts. The science, there's no scientific evidence that playing contact football at a young age from 7 to 11 has harmed any child later in life. There's no scientific evidence of that. And the papers are in there, actually, in the website and the book, and we talk about that. Now, that being said, that's what we're doing today and actually has gotten misunderstood. We've created so many options in football, from tackle, flex, flag, 7-on-7. We've done this for a reason, to help. Each kid might have a different entry level. I can coach youth football for a long time. Been coaching camp since 1991. Started coaching my son in 2003 as a youth football coach. Is there a couple kids that I go back and look at? Hey, they could have started with flag for a couple years and then went into tackle. And then there's a majority. My son would be that one of those kids. He just wanted to play tackle. He was meant to play tackle football, and he started at age 7. And I'm like, I start thinking, to have robbed my son of that opportunity, the things that he's learned that I've been able to teach young kids. Listen, I have a coaching philosophy. We coach our kids in the yardsticks of their years and not ours. I tell my coach that right off the bat. Here's what's going to give you patience and perspective. Okay, we're 38. Okay, they're 8. Let's not forget that, okay? When we tell them something and they forget it 2 seconds later, they're 8. They're not 38. They're going to do that. When they go home and they're worried about playing and pizza and having a good time, they come back and they've forgotten everything we talked about, they're 8. And if we teach like that, A, it helps us. But the things we get to teach from it, the life lessons, you know, people talk about, you know.
Right.
When you don't quit in life, how do you teach that? What environment do you ever have? I mean, sports is a great environment for that. Let me just tell you this. On this quest, had I found out otherwise with this disease, with the pattern of CTE, what they see from the scientists and the neuropathologists across this country and in Canada, had I thought for 1 second my son was in jeopardy, my son wouldn't be playing football.
Same here.
I am not. And I was not. I was... And I, you know, somebody asked me this the other day, and I thought it was a fabulous question. I never really thought about it. They said, when you started this, did you expect it to end like this? And I was like, you know, I didn't know what to expect, which is kind of interesting. I didn't. I just wanted to know the truth. Was I shocked that the science world is saying, I mean, are you kidding me? We are observing. We have no idea what causes it. But we have cases outside of sports. And more showing up across the UK, in Australia, and the United States itself, and in Canada, all of these cases where nobody's even part of sports, never played football, never had a concussion. I've had neuropathologists go, you know, we're looking in the wrong place, you know, and really this could be nothing. But I'm like, we don't know. And I keep going back to when you don't know, you don't know. So why can you say anything more than that? You just don't know.
Well, and part of it is you don't know because it can't properly be diagnosed until after death. Dave Duerson, Junior Seau, for goodness sakes. I mean, I've known Larry Johnson because Larry Johnson went to State High here, and then I announced his games here at Penn State. He's assuming he has it, or at least the symptoms of it, and that's you can't tell at this stage.
Well, see, there's a bunch of harmful things said right there. I mean, Larry Johnson, I think he's already diagnosed with bipolar or something. Now, for him to self-diagnose himself and talk about symptoms, I'm going to go back to what they said. They don't know what causes it, and they don't know what it causes. So nobody knows that there's any symptoms from this, and nobody knows what those would be. Okay, so we can't even see people speculate that, but we do. We put them on Good Morning America, and we run that title on there. Well, what are people going to think? You got people self-diagnose themselves. Here's what a neuropathologist said to one time when I asked him specific questions about stuff like that. She looked at me, she said, let me tell you something. Alzheimer's, we've been working on for decades. Hundreds and hundreds of doctors are working on it and collaborating on it. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of papers have been written on it, clinics done on it. Thousands of brains have been looked at, and we don't know what causes that. How are you going to tell me one paper and one research thing is given give you any answers? She looked at me, she goes, it's a pinprick as far as starting. And I was just like, wow. I mean, I'm like, but then that's really what kind of really disturbed me. It's like, you know, people are running around scared to death, and the mom or the dad that don't know, haven't lived where I've lived, know what I know. I mean, I don't blame them for seeing stuff in the headlines and saying, my kid's not going to play. And I'm scared to death. I love my kids without end. I'm all in line with that. That's why I was so passionate about writing this book. I couldn't write it fast enough, but it is studious. It takes so much time. And to finally get it out, to have the information that I was taking years to figure out and put together to help people with that decision, I'm proud of that. I'm happy about that. And I'm happy for all the doctors that helped me because I couldn't have done it without them.
Yeah, you should be. And I lost my father to Alzheimer's, so everything you just said was gospel about it. I mean, nobody knows, and millions have been invested in it. Obviously, you learned a lot in doing this. Okay, how important was it for you to absorb the information and not have preconceived thoughts about it and then have the information form your thought?
Well, I think that was vital at the very beginning. You know, listen, there's nothing I can do about my career. My career is over, you know.
Right.
And I was thinking about, you know, my son. I was like, well, shoot, man. I mean, he's not really at the age I can tell him to quit playing. You know, he's not a kid anymore. But I've always thought, and here's what I think we need to get at, especially if you're somebody, regardless of what you heard right now, there'll still be people going, he doesn't believe in CT, even though I've already told you what it is. I haven't even explained what it is. And they go, he doesn't believe concussions cause CT. Again, there's no scientific evidence of that. I've asked doctors. I've had them explain papers to me. Going in with an open mind listen, I just want to know the truth. I'm telling you, that cleared me of everything. I was just like, let it come to me. Just let me. I didn't use just Dr. Cummings. I mean, he's a brilliant dude. However, I mean, from Julian Bell's, Lizzie Hazarati up in Canada, I mean, and literally cutting brains and listening and watching, and everybody kind of starts repeating the same thing. I'm like, okay, this is not an accident. You know, people don't even know I talk to, say, Lily. Nobody knows I talk to Peter. You know, these are people, neuropathologists, just sharing what the real truth is to me. And that just gave me real comfort, too, that I knew I was on the right path. Then the science papers, like I said, everybody's using the same science papers. How people interpret them the way they do in the media is really evil and wrong. But that's why I put them on the website. Read them. Go through them. Read all the stuff in there. And then you just take the information and use it how you want to, but I've always thought it's best to have all the information to help us make choices versus, you know, something out of fear that you see in a headline.
Yeah, finally, because I know I have to let you go, but Dr. Margo Patukian, who's at Princeton now, had been one of the team doctors here at Penn State. She was our team doctor for basketball. So 25 years ago, she'd be talking about concussions and the susceptibility to another one. So she and others have done a great job of just advancing to making sure that there's more knowledge and everyone's more intelligent about it, which goes back to one of the stories you tell in the book about you're missing the last preseason game. The Bears are going to play the Buccaneers to open the season. You have a splitting headache. And on the phone, the general practitioner says, how are you feeling? I'm fine. Okay, you're cleared.
Yeah. See, that, you know, what you're talking about is a protocol. And you got to realize the Steelers are doing cognitive testing in 1991, okay?
Yep.
That's before anybody in the professional world, actually in the neuropathology world in this country, knew anything about another tool for head trauma. Just that's a real honest perspective people have to remember, okay? Nobody knew about it. Nobody in professional sports. The Steelers, even though they were doing it, because Chuck Noll challenges Joe Maroon and then Dr. Lovell gets involved, they don't even really know why they're doing it other than to please Chuck Noll to create a subjective and objective information when somebody had a concussion. So think of that in 1991, but now where we are today, the protocols and treatments and therapies, that's why protocol that we have available now should be everywhere in all sports, and it needs to be applicable, okay?
Yep.
Just because we have it doesn't mean people are doing it. That's the thing that's most important. That's why I went to Congress in 2009 and pleaded for them. We're doing nothing for 99% of the football players. I was specific to football when I was there, which is 8 to 18. Okay, we're doing stuff for the NCAA and the NFL. 99% of our players are 8 to 18. Let's establish a protocol now. And that protocol was any type of sign of head trauma, they got removed and they could not return to whatever event they were a part of. And then they couldn't play the next week. So it gave them a two-week window to help the brain, because we knew that even though you might still start feeling better, you still, the best chance of you returning was a two-week window. That's where neuropathologists felt it was best. Now, keep in mind, that's 2009, too. That's almost a decade later. The treatments and therapies that are available, the improved protocols. I mean, this is the safest environment we've ever had in the history of sports.
Yes.
If you picked an era, you wouldn't want to play in the era where you had a strap in your helmet and you didn't drink water or you're considered soft and you did nothing for head trauma. You'd want to play now.
Yes.
And unfortunately, that message has gotten lost, and hopefully the book will give you the information to at least calm, at least let you know how to handle head trauma if it ever happens, know the treatments and therapies, and keep in mind, Western Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh, some of the best resources in the country, although there's good ones all over the place. I'm sure that up in Penn State area, you guys have them too. And we need the parents to know about those so they can get their kids help if they do have a concussion and they're having symptoms afterwards.
I thought this was fascinating. I couldn't put it down. It was really well researched, and it is an important read. I hope you don't mind me saying that. It was an important read. Thank you so much for A, writing it, and B, for being on the show to talk about it.
My pleasure, brother. Thanks, Steve.
Back tomorrow on News Radio 1070 WKOK.